Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. First, we'll discuss our southern border situation with Tom Homan. Then General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. It's an honor and a pleasure to welcome back Tom Homan to the show. Tom ran our border situation under President Trump when our border was pretty much under control. It's not now, from what I can tell. Anyway, welcome back, Tom.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tom, start by telling us about your involvement in border security. You've basically served at every level from a guy on the border all the way up, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. I started in Border Patrol in 1984 as a Border Patrol agent. GS-5 Border Patrol agent wearing a uniform, patrolling the southern border. And the next 34 years, I worked my way up the chain. I became the first director of ICE that came up to the ranks. So I think that's my greatest achievement, because the 20,000 men and women that worked for me, I didn't ask them to do anything that I didn't do myself, because I came up to the program.
There's something about leadership where that makes real sense. I don't care how good a leader you are, if you haven't done or done something like what you're asking me to do, you can't know it that well.
So, of course, if you're in that position, you know where the bodies are buried, no one's going to pull the wool over your eyes because you've done that job. So I knew the heartaches, I knew the difficulties, I knew the successes, and based on my 34-year experience, when I got to be the director, I tried to use my 34 years on, you know, I knew the pitfalls, I knew what worked and what didn't. So we had a great administration under Trump. We got a lot of things done.
Yep, none of us are perfect, but there's nothing like experience and good brains to give us the best possible outcome. Okay, our border is beyond crisis right now. The people are letting into their country. You know, I'm all in favor of letting people into our country, but I think we have laws that say how you do it legally. So it's a way that people become part of our country. They speak our language. They understand our culture, or they're contributing something. I understand that President Biden has a new plan that he's just put into effect in the last week or so that's supposed to make everything better. Do you know anything about that?
It's not going to make anything better. I read his plan, the proclamation, he calls it. And bottom line is, it's not going to fix anything. It's just smoke and mirrors. Look, he spent 3.5 years in office and didn't do a single thing to slow the flow of the southern border. Now we're close to election. He puts something out, making pretend he's doing something. But it's not going to work. It does nothing to stop the parole abuse they're using to bring millions of people into the country. It does nothing to stop child trafficking. Over 400,000 children have been smuggled into the U.S. by cartels. It does nothing to stop that. It does nothing about finding the children that were released into the United States that they've lost track of, over 100,000. It's not going to work. If they want to secure the border, they know how to do it. They simply dust off the Trump plans that were proven effective and reinstitute them. And you're right. You know, I'm not anti-immigrant. I'm anti-illegal immigration. While this massive crisis on our southern border, where people are making fraudulent asylum claims that are clogging up the system, there are millions of people standing in line, doing things the lawful way, the right way, taking their tests, paying their fees, taking their physicals, and coming to this country the right way. Now, they're all sitting in the back seat because this flood of illegal migration on the southern border has overwhelmed the system.
Indeed. One of the things I do is I work with my church with the young adults once a week. There's a young man there who came from, I think, Afghanistan. He speaks English. He came on a student visa. The visa let him stay 2 years after he graduated. Well, he has graduated. He'd like to stay here, but he can't even get somebody to talk to him from the government about how to extend his visa so he can stay here legally.
Yeah, I've heard this complaint hundreds of times. The current CIS, Citizenship and Immigration Services, are so tied up dealing with fraudulent asylum claims and work authorizations for illegal aliens, if you can believe it, that they don't have time to deal with the legal immigrants who are adding to this country, who are a great part of this country. This country is built on immigrants. And so, again, they take a back seat while we're taking care of all the illegal aliens, which is the first administration in my lifetime that's done that, putting America last and putting legal immigrants last and putting those that, look, people need to understand, these millions of people come across the border. The first action they take, they want to be part of the greatest nation on earth, is they break our law. Entering the country illegally is a crime. Then when they finally get the due process and 9 out of 10 get ordered removed because they simply don't qualify for asylum, very few leave. So they ignore a judge's order, a second crime. So, you know, we need a president that's in office, is going to abide by the laws enacted by Congress and signed by a president. We're a nation of laws. We need to practice that. There needs to be consequences for law breaking.
Wow, that's a pretty radical idea, though that is the basis that our nation was founded on. That's why we're a constitutional republic. We're a nation of laws. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Tom Homan, the former director of ICE under President Trump. Tom, we have laws that say how you can enter legally. Is our government violating our laws?
Yes, they are. I mean, not only are they ignoring the law, they're actually, in my opinion, violating it because they're bringing millions of people into what they call parole. Now, when I was ICE director, I paroled people into the United States. In a year and a half, I paroled three. This administration is paroling thousands a day. And the parole policy is clear. It says you must consider a case-by-case analysis on the specifics of the case, but must show us a significant public benefit to the United States to parole this person in. They're not doing a case-by-case analysis. They're bringing thousands in a day. There's no time to do a case-by-case analysis and dig into the specifics of each case. So they're violating the parole policy. They're breaking the law. And they're releasing aliens, illegal aliens from the border en masse. And the law is clear on that. The statute in the Immigration Nationality Act is clear. The law says this: if you enter the country illegally without proper documentation, you shall be detained. Shall. Not maybe. Not we'll think about it, but shall. And they're not doing it. They're detaining very few. They're releasing a vast majority of them. So not only are they ignoring the law, they're violating the law. And, you know, and several cases are pending in federal court now. I just wish they hurry up so they can put a stop to this nonsense. But like everything else, even the federal court system is slow at doing their job.
You know, it sounds like maybe this sounds crazy that we should be charging our federal officials with violating the law.
I think they should be impeached. I think Secretary Mayorkas should have been impeached, and the Senate failed to do it. If they can impeach President Trump for making a phone call to Ukraine, they can't impeach Mayorkas for not only ignoring the law, but violating the law, and based on his actions. We got, you know, 8 million people entering the United States illegally. We got a record number of women and children being sex trafficked across an open border. We got a record number of Americans, 148,000 at least, dying from fentanyl overdoses. We got a record number of people on the terrorist watch list coming across the border, 358. Under Trump, in 4 years, we had 13. So, you know, considering what the results of their open border is, there's certainly grounds for impeachment at a very minimum.
I would think so. And when President Trump became president, somebody, I'm guessing you were part of it, decided that we needed to tighten up the border somewhat, and some steps were taken. Can you talk about that?
Look, I think President Trump will be our president in January. At least I hope he does.
Amen.
And when he does that, we're going to lock the border down. We'll secure the border in 120 days. And how are we going to do that? We're simply going to dust off the plans we did before that proved effective. The Remain in Mexico program was a game changer. People stopped coming when they realized they weren't going to be caught and released into the United States. When we told them you're going to wait in Mexico for your hearing, they stopped coming. It also saved a lot of lives because people weren't making that treacherous journey, where 31% of women get sexually assaulted and migrants die on in the river and in the desert. You know, under Joe Biden, we had over 1,800 that died. So the Trump's policies not only were humane, they saved lives and they're effective. The Remain in Mexico program, the 30 Safe Country Agreements, ending catch and release, building the wall, all that stuff worked. Under Trump, illegal immigration was at a 45-year low. So our policies were effective, proven effective, so we're simply going to turn them back on and finish the job we started.
Well, it's hard to argue with that because it did work. We saw it working. The whole world saw it working. And now, for some reason, it's not there anymore. That's beyond bizarre. There's more to discuss about the border, and Tom is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Tom and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Veterans have unique health care needs from their time in service. They deserve access to timely and quality care.
Concerned Veterans for America continues working to get veterans the care they have earned.
We were instrumental in getting the VA Mission Act signed into law, and we fight every day for more reforms that expand healthcare access and options for veterans everywhere.
Visit CVAFrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillen. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with former Director of ICE, Tom Homan, about our southern border. Tom, these people who happen to be illegal, they aren't contributing. Our nation is not better because of them. We citizens aren't living a better life because of them. Am I missing something? Are they contributing something to our nation that's good?
Well, I would say that many of the illegal aliens, that's a legal term. That's a term set out in statute. So I use the term illegal alien. I won't stop using it until they change the law. I mean, this administration was ordering Border Patrol agents to stop using the term, ICE agents to stop using the term. That's a bunch of bullcrap. The law says illegal aliens and under Title 8 in the United States Code. When they change the law, stop using the term. But illegal aliens, many of them are, you know, once they get here, they're pretty law-abiding and, you know, many of them working in fields. And a lot of them are, you know, to be honest with you, a lot of them are hardworking. The problem is they cheated the system and they came in the country the wrong way. There are millions standing in line to come to this country to do the same thing. So, yeah, you know, they work here and they work hard. However, first thing they did is violate laws to enter the country illegally and move the illegal immigrant out of place. So even though they do hard work, you know, whether it's produce or working in the hospitality industry as most of them low-level wages, yeah, you know, they work hard. They're supporting their families. But they started out by breaking laws in the United States. And like I said, there's millions and millions of people that want to be a part of the greatest country on earth. And I've said from day one, you can't be a part of the greatest country on earth and not respect the laws. You can't have it both ways. So that's what irritates me the most is they cheated the system. People say, well, they're just crossing the border to get a better life and support the families. I get it, but they violated the law by doing that, and they need to stand in line. There's a right way to do this. Go stand in line with everybody else. Come in legally. Because here's a problem. And I tell people that just about every speech I give, I say, look, I don't care what your opinion is on illegal immigration. Put that aside. But when you cause a crisis this big that overwhelms the Border Patrol, where the majority of Border Patrol agents are pulled from the line to process, change diapers, make baby formula, make sandwiches, make transports. When you take that many Border Patrol agents off the line, that's when the fentanyl comes across and kills Americans. That's when the sex trafficking women and children happen. The cartels create gaps when they overwhelm the Border Patrol. When they create those gaps, that's when they move the terrorists. That's when they move the gang members. That's when they sex trafficking women and children. So regardless of what your thoughts on illegal immigration, it causes a whole under ugly belly that puts this country at great risk. Not to mention the biggest national security vulnerability I've seen in my lifetime, where the border is wide open and those people that want to come here and do us harm from terrorist nations have no problem getting in and getting away.
You know, that's a really good point. I've often thought that if only 1% of these people are terrorists, criminals, sex traffickers, people that want to do damage to our country, only 1% are. That's a huge number.
Yeah, and look, Casey, and look, I'll say it again. They've caught over 380 people off the terrorist watch list. Caught in 3.5 years. Under Trump, we had 13. They arrested more people on terrorist watch list last month than we did in 4 years. But the scariest thing is, we're just shy of 2 million known gotaways. These are people into the border, into the country legally. We have them on video, drone traffic, sensor traffic. We have image. They came across the border. They weren't apprehended because, again, Border Patrol was so overwhelmed doing everything else but their job. So you got to ask yourself, why did 2 million people pay the cartels more to get away? Because you pay the cartels two amounts of money. You pay them an amount just to get you to the border, turn yourself in. The cartel's job ends at the border. However, if you want to get away, if you want to get to New York, you want to get to Chicago, you want to get to the interior of the United States, you pay a hell of a lot more. So why did 2 million people pay more to get away? Why didn't they pay less turn themselves in, get a free airline ticket to the city of their choice, get a free hotel room, get 3 meals a day, get free medical care, and work authorization. Why the hell did they pay more not to take advantage of that free giveaway program?
And where did
that just scared the hell out of everybody?
I wouldn't be too far off if I guessed Russia, China, Iran, and countries like that are funding that.
Oh, look, your bottom line is since October, there's been over 30,000 Chinese nationals, males of military age, have crossed that border. And I tell people all the time, you know, China, and you know this well as I do, China is not going to let 30,000 other people leave their country without them being directly involved and conspiring to make this happen. The Chinese government is complicit. They're involved in this. So why is the Chinese government sending 30,000 of their young men to this country? And that is such a huge national security issue. And I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat or independent. That should be a nonpartisan issue. Everybody should be concerned with that. Why isn't this administration doing something about it? Have you heard of any meetings between our Secretary of State and meeting with China? They talk about the economy. They talk about, you know, everything else. Why aren't they talking about this national security issue? Why aren't they talking about the precursors that make fentanyl being sold by China to criminal cartels in Mexico to create the poison that's killed 148,000 Americans? The criminal cartels of Mexico through fentanyl have killed more Americans than every terrorist organization in the world combined. And this administration is not doing anything about it. That's, again, this is beyond the pale. I wake up every morning pissed off because I can't believe it. No one's taking action on this.
Good point. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Tom Homan, the former director of ICE. Tom, we can talk about it, but we got to do something about it. Give us a call to action. What can we citizens do that will help fix this situation? Because I don't think there's a fast fix. But what do we do?
Look, you got to get to the voting booth, right? We got to get President Trump back, first of all. Just don't go to the voting booth to Mary Ballard. Get your family to do it. Get your neighbors to do it. Get your friends to do it. We got to overwhelm this next election so we can make sure that every vote's counted. They need to overwhelm the election. It's going to be a close election. So we need everybody out there fighting for the country. And not just for the president. Get out there and vote for your school board and your mayor and your city council. We got to take this country back from the ground up. But please, cast your vote. Make sure you vote for the president in overwhelming numbers so we can make sure we win this thing. And I'll say one more thing. Before the election, call your congressman, call your senator. I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat. If they're Republican, ask them why the hell they're sitting by and letting this happen. They'll say, well, you know, the Democrats, they own Senate. We don't have enough votes in the House. That's a bunch of crap. You can do a lot of things. You can boycott any further legislation. Don't sit down and negotiate squat. Don't negotiate anything. Tell them, you know what? We won't negotiate a budget. We won't negotiate any legislation until you show us one thing. Show us one thing you're going to do to slow the flow on the border. One thing to slow this administration's illegal activities on the border. One thing to help secure the border. And maybe we'll come back and negotiate. But they should be boycotting every meeting, every legislative meeting. Because people, and if they got to shut the government down, shut it down. People say, well, Tom, that's a very harsh thing to do, shut the government down. Okay. At what point is it enough? At what point is it worse enough that we got to take action? 148,000 dead Americans, that's not enough. 380 people on terrorist watch list being arrested at the southern border, that's not enough. 2 million known gotaways, many of them, how many of them came from this country sponsoring terrorism? That isn't enough. A 600% increase in sex trafficking of women and children, that's not enough. A record number of migrants have died in U.S. soil, that's not enough. I mean, at what point is enough enough? And if people need to stand up, so demand your Republican senator and congressman take action. Boycott. Don't negotiate any legislation until this administration takes action to keep this country safe. I'm telling you, everything we talked about in the last 20 minutes, this is the biggest national security vulnerability I've seen in this nation since I was born. You think 9/11 was bad? Hold on tight. I know something's coming. Can I prove it? No. But you know how many terrorists have entered this country and got away? We'll never know. But you know what? Someday we'll find out, and it's going to be a bad day for America. Christopher Wray, director of the FBI, who I have very little respect in, even he has testified 6 times that the southern border is a huge national security vulnerability. And yet, the Dems are doing nothing. It's time for Republicans to grow a spine, grow a set, and do something.
Well said. There's a call to action. We can't just whine and complain. We've got to do something by holding elected officials accountable and letting them know what we want. Tom, thank you. Thank you for your excellent comments today and for your service to our nation. I hope you are able to continue in service to our nation for the next 4 years. God bless you.
January 2025, count on it.
I'm going to. Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. We'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. UniversalCoin.com/Denny. Check UniversalCoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice, and take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HealthVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gilliam. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And troops, it's time now for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, joining us is General Chris Petty. Welcome back, brother.
Always a pleasure, Denny.
Chris, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army. You served a whole career.
Yeah, 31 years and active duty, guard, and actually a little bit of time in the reserves. I mean, it's an interesting story, but that's not what we're going to talk about. But I went to West Point like you did, and I branched aviation and, you know, did the airborne ranger, you know, CUA stuff, drank the Kool-Aid hard, but I decided to be an aviator. And so I did all the normal aviation stuff. I actually got out of the Army at when the Cold War was over because it looked kind of boring. So I joined the Guard, and that led to a lot of interesting opportunities for me. Anyway, highlights were I commanded a battalion of aviation forces during the surge that led to some other opportunities. And all of a sudden I'm a brigade commander sending units to Iraq and Afghanistan. And then I pin on a star, lo and behold, the blind squirrel gets a nut. And they send me to Bosnia to be the NATO commander. And then I worked in the Pentagon for a while on the Army staff and finished out at NORTHCOM in a combatant command. So I got to see a lot of interesting things and do some interesting things. It was a wonderful, wonderful chapter of my life.
I understand, bro. I love the time I served, too. Okay, let's go to the Battle of the Month. I think it has something to do with someplace called Normandy in France. Am I right?
You're right. This is the month to talk about D-Day, and because it's the 80th anniversary of D-Day, all your listeners have been hearing things about D-Day, which is wonderful. This is really an important chapter in U.S. history. And this battle, you know, I always start with why should we know it? Well, this one is more so than others, an important chapter in U.S. history. And this is the battle that opened a path on the continent of Europe to actually go in with boots on the ground and defeat Germany, which we Army guys always know you got to have boots on the ground. So this is how that opened up. And although, you know, it was a gigantic air-sea invasion, you know, largest in history, many people say, you know, I can quibble about that. Okinawa was actually a little larger by like 30,000 troops. But anyway, it's still gigantic combined air-sea assault, one of the biggest in history. So it's an exciting battle. It's great history. It's wonderful stories. It's alliance operations and everything rolled into one.
Yes, it was. And it had huge implications. You can't debate. This turned the war around.
Yeah.
Suddenly, we, the Allies, were winning.
Yeah, this was truly the beginning of the end of Hitler. So let me give you the summary. So the Allies, well, this is Eisenhower versus Rommel. I kind of like to you give the opposing commanders. Eisenhower yep. is the supreme commander versus Rommel, who's in charge of Army Group B, as in Bravo, which Hitler posted Rommel in charge of the French section and a little bit north, the beaches, because Hitler knew this was coming in some form. So here's the summary. So the Allies knew they had to invade Europe. Hitler knew the Allies were going to invade Europe. So this was all going to come to a head at some point. Hitler prepared by building a massive defensive line along the Atlantic and the Baltic Sea coast called the Atlantic Wall. But it stretched for 800 miles. I mean, it was a massive undertaking with barbed wire and defensive positions and pillboxes and firing positions, et cetera, et cetera. So the big thing here is Hitler has to defend, you know, essentially 800 miles, and the Allies are going to figure out how to mass combat power at a decisive point and overwhelm the thin defenses. And they did that using surprise, which I'll talk about. So Britain and the United States are discussing this actually since 1941. You know, how do we get a toehold onto Europe to, you know, take the war to Hitler? They eventually agree on Normandy because the beaches are suitable. It's close enough to England for continuous air coverage. It's not an obvious location like Calais, which was Hitler's bias. Hitler thought Calais was going to be the invasion site, which really helped, and the Allies played to that. And they chose Eisenhower to command the operation because he had some experience with North Africa, Operation Torch and Operation Husky in Sicily in July of 43. And he had the temperament to keep the alliance together, which is an important deal when you're dealing with guys like General Montgomery, as you probably know. So for months, troops, supplies, rehearsals, everything's going on in Britain. And there's a big deception operation, which doesn't get a lot of discussion in Normandy. And that's called Operation Bodyguard. The Allies are doing fake radio traffic and maneuvers and dummy equipment and everything to fool Hitler. And part of that was, you've heard of General Patton, because the Germans rated Patton as like the top U.S. general. And so the Allies created this fictitious U.S. First Army, gave it to General Patton, and it was, you know, going to invade at Calais, which was Hitler's bias. So they played perfectly into this. The Allies had a big intel advantage with Ultra. You've heard of Ultra, the yes. code-breaking technology. So Eisenhower actually had a pretty good idea of German dispositions, which is, you know, as you know, as a military guy, quite helpful in your attack planning. So the invasion is planned as a two-pronged attack. So it's going to lead with airborne and glider operations. They're going to drop behind the beaches, seize key terrain, especially things like bridges and stuff like that, to prevent German reinforcements when the attack begins. And it's going to be followed by this amphibious assault. Operation Neptune, it's often called Operation Overlord, but it's really Operation Neptune followed by Operation Overlord. Neptune was really the sea and land invasion. And Overlord was, you know, the pushing out of the beachhead. But anyway, so it's going to be followed by this amphibious assault. Five beaches, Utah, Omaha, Gold, Juneau, and Sword. U.S. forces under Omar Bradley were given Utah and Omaha beaches. That's why we talk about those a lot in America. The British and Canadians were given Gold, Juneau, and Sword. Plan set for 4 or 5 June, but bad weather forced Eisenhower to delay to the 6th. That's a well-known story, which really helped. People don't realize that the Germans saw the bad weather as like, well, the Allies aren't going to attack now. In fact, even some of the air defense units stood down, and Rommel actually flies off to Berlin to convince Hitler he needs reinforcements. So Rommel's not even there when the attack begins. So the bad weather really played to the Allies' plan here too. So the rest of the story is kind of like the tactical battle unfolding. So everyone's familiar with the pre-dawn airborne drops of the 82nd and the 101st on the west side of the beach, you know, the 50-mile five beaches. And the British 6th Airborne is dropping in the east side of the 50-mile beachheads. And a lot of the drops were off by miles because the pilots are trying to avoid German anti-aircraft fire. But the paratroopers rallied. They seized all these objectives. It's really a massive success, even though it's very chaotic. It's a lot of great initiative by the 82nd, 101st, and the British 6th Airborne. So it's followed by glider operations. So infantry's landing in gliders and fields and stuff to supplement the airborne troops. Meanwhile, out at sea, thousands of soldiers are disembarking ships onto these landing crafts for a 2 to 3 hour ride in choppy seas to the beaches. miserable, I'm sure, you know, as they're vomiting and everything. But they did rally and do the battle cry when they started hearing naval gunfire pounding the shore. And that lifted everybody's morale. About 6:30 in the morning, the first waves were coming ashore. But the currents were difficult. They mixed up some of the drop locations for the landing craft. 4th Infantry drops on Utah Beach. And actually, the currents helped them because it puts them in a less defended area. And they link up with paratroopers pretty quick. And so Utah Beach is going fairly well. 1st Infantry Division and the 29th Infantry Division drop on Omaha, or sail into Omaha, whatever you want to say. Omaha is the most difficult beach of the day. It's legendary, you know, as far as the struggles on that beach. And low clouds prevent adequate air and naval gunfire support. So it's just a difficult slog. And then between the two beaches, the American beaches, you have the 2nd Ranger Battalion assaulting Point Du Hoc, because that was where the big, heavy German guns were positioned. And that's a story in itself, with the Rangers climbing the cliffs and all that. It's an amazing, all these are amazing stories. But the Brits and Canadians, too, are facing good resistance on Gold, Juno, and Sword, and they're fighting through it, doing great things. But really, Omaha Beach is kind of the story. It's like hanging in the balance of the day. Fiercest fighting by far. Don't even know if it's a success until nightfall, actually. Meanwhile, all these confusing reports are coming into Rommel's headquarters. Hitler still thinks that this is just a feint by the Allies, because he's so convinced that Calais, because that's the thin part between Dover and the continent. And so Hitler's not helping here. Big surprise. So when Rommel finally makes his counterattack with his 12th Panzer Division, he does it to the east by the Brits and the Canadians, because he just thought that would be a more dangerous route if it was seized by the Allies. But by this point, air and naval gunfire just tears up the 12th Panzer. So it's just too little, too late. And, you know, by dawn on the 7th, all the Allies are holding all 5 beaches. So D-Day actually works. All right. So it's still fighting hard for a couple weeks, but it works. D-Day is just this remarkable story of struggle and success.
It is. Chris, thank you. This was such an amazing thing. Oh, Battle Digest. How can people touch base with you to plug in to your great stories of battles?
The easiest way is to go to battledigest.com. Just one word, battledigest.com, and check out my summaries of these battles. They're really concise and well-written, well-researched, and beautifully graphically oriented. So battledigest.com, check it out.
Thank you, Chris, for your great review of this really important and appropriate history time-wise, and for being a member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I appreciate you, bro.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Denny. I appreciate it.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Do some more push-ups, about 64 this time. I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800-UCB-GOLD to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800-UCB-GOLD. That's 800-UCB-GOLD, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Josh, a Navy vet, wants to know if you think we'll be drawn into a war sometime soon.
Josh, I hope not. But Russia is threatening us and NATO for allowing Ukraine to have weapons they can use against Russian territory. Stay tuned.
And Jennifer, the mother of a son who wants to join the military, is urging him not to do so. Do you think she'll agree?
Jennifer, while most of our military units are good places to serve, the senior leadership is very poor and is forcing bad things on our troops. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 25 June 1876, Native American forces led by Chiefs Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull defeated the Army troops of Lieutenant Colonel George Custer in a bloody battle near southern Montana's Little Bighorn River. In 1875, after gold was discovered in South Dakota, our Army ignored previous treaty agreements and invaded the region. This led many Sioux and Cheyenne tribesmen to leave their reservations and join Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse. By the late spring, over 10,000 Native Americans had gathered in a camp along the Little Bighorn River, this in defiance of our government's order to return to their reservations or risk being attacked. In mid-June, three columns of our soldiers lined up against the camp. A force of 1,200 Native Americans turned back the first column on June 17. General Alfred Terry ordered Custer's 7th Cavalry to scout ahead for enemy forces. On June 25, Custer drew near the camp and decided to press on rather than wait for reinforcements. Custer's 600 men entered the valley. Crazy Horse's large force met them head-on. Despite Custer's desperate attempts, they were quickly overwhelmed. Custer and his 200 men were attacked by about 3,000 warriors. Shortly, Custer and all his soldiers were dead. This battle, also called Custer's Last Stand, marked the most decisive Native American victory and the worst U.S. Army defeat in the Long Plains Indian War.
Sure was. On 26 June 1917, during World War I, the first 14,000 U.S. infantry troops landed in France at the port of Saint-Nazaire. The landing site had been kept secret because of the menace of German submarines. By the time our troops lined up for their first salute on French soil, an enthusiastic crowd welcomed them. However, the doughboys, as the British referred to our green troops, were untrained, ill-equipped, and far from ready for fighting on the Western Front. But they got trained and equipped and turned the war into an Allied victory.
And on 24 June 1948, one of the most dramatic standoffs in the Cold War began as the Soviet Union blocked all road and rail traffic to and from West Berlin. This became a terrible diplomatic move by the Soviets, while we emerged with renewed purpose and confidence. We were furious. For a few tense days, the world waited to see if this would become a war. West Berliners were worried about shortages of food, water, and medical aid. Our response came just 2 days later. A massive airlift of supplies into West Berlin began in what became one of the greatest logistical efforts in history. For the Soviets, this quickly became a diplomatic embarrassment. Russia looked like a bully trying to starve men, women, and children. And our successful airlift accentuated our technological superiority over the Soviets. On May 12, 1949, the Soviets ended the blockade.
That was an amazing time. And the British were a big help in that airlift, too. And on the 25th of June, 1950, armed forces from communist North Korea smashed into South Korea, beginning the Korean War. Our nation, under the auspices of the UN, sprang to the South's defense. The forces of many nations fought a bloody and frustrating war for the next 3 years. Korea, a former Japanese possession, had been divided into zones of occupation following World War II. Our forces accepted the surrender of the Japanese forces in southern Korea, while the Soviets did so in the north. Like in Germany, however, the temporary division became permanent. The Soviets established a communist regime in North Korea, while we became the main source of support for South Korea. The North Korean attack surprised everyone. We responded by pushing a resolution through the UN Security Council for military assistance to South Korea. Russia wasn't present to veto this action, as it was then boycotting the Security Council, which is why the UN actually did something useful. President Truman rapidly dispatched our forces to engage in what he called a police action. U.S. and South Korean forces marched into North Korea. This led to Chinese forces entering the war in 1950. The war then bogged down into a bloody stalemate. In 1953, we signed a ceasefire that ended the conflict. The agreement also continued the division of North and South Korea at just about the same place as before the conflict. A ceasefire doesn't end a war, so the war technically continues. The Korean War was the first hot war of the Cold War. Over 55,000 U.S. troops were killed. Korea was the first limited war, one in which our aim was not the total defeat of the enemy, but rather the limited goal of protecting South Korea. It was frustrating for our people who were used to the total victory that had been achieved in World War II.
And on 28 June 1965, during the Vietnam War, in the first major offensive ordered for our forces, 3,000 troops of the 173rd Airborne Brigade, in conjunction with 800 Australian soldiers and a Vietnamese airborne unit, assaulted a jungle area known as Viet Cong Zone D, northeast of Saigon. The operation was called off after 3 days when it failed to make any major contact with the enemy.
And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a man went on a crime spree beginning in Louisiana and ending near Port Arthur, Texas. He stole a car first, then drove into Texas where he robbed a grocery store at gunpoint. After fleeing the scene, he attempted to rob a man and woman who were crabbing nearby. He pointed a rifle at the couple and demanded money. The man was able to flee to his car and retrieved his own legally carried pistol, and a gunfight ensued. The robber's crime spree ended with his dead body face down on the pavement. The man and woman defenders were not hit by gunfire.
Thanks, Colonel. Crime sprees like this terrify the general public and are becoming more common. Many times they are fueled by drugs and alcohol or mental illness, leaving the attacker with little or no self-control. These people tend to continue their crime spree until they're stopped forcibly by police or an armed citizen. The armed citizen in this case performed well, considering his situation. He was facing a violent felon with no qualms about shooting him, plus he was also outgunned. First, let's talk about the weapons involved. The robber had a rifle. This gives him greater accuracy and incredible knockdown power. In the military, we universally call our rifle our primary weapon, and we call our pistol our secondary. If you have to fight, then you start with your primary and only transition to the pistol after you've exhausted rifle rounds or the distance has closed the close quarters battle. Second, in this case, the armed citizen started out unarmed and had to run to his truck to get his weapon. This isn't unusual simply because most people don't want to carry a heavy and bulky pistol around with them, especially when they're doing physical activity. Let's face it, it's always easier to leave the gun at home or in the car. Pistols are a pain in the butt to carry, but if this citizen had to do it all over again, I'm certain he would have preferred to have the gun readily accessible and on his person. It's not fun running to the car while a man is shooting at you with a rifle. And finally, the armed citizen was able to get behind cover during the gunfight and stand toe-to-toe against a violent felon who was using a long gun. Most people who get shot with a rifle are mortally wounded, whereas a higher percentage of people wounded with handguns tend to survive. But in this case, the armed citizen had the benefit of an engine block to stop the rifle rounds, and he obviously was a superior marksman since he bested the criminal. Frontlines of Freedom commends this Texas man for his bravery and superior marksmanship, and we wish him a long and happy life of crabbing. However, we highly recommend he starts carrying his gun in his holster instead of leaving it in the truck. This was another fine display by an armed Texan, and we salute you.
We sure do. Our movie of the month is The Elevator. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Ambassador John Bolton will return to share his views on the world. Elaine Donnelly from the Center for Military Readiness will share her insights. Terry Lanning will present a song he hopes will be accepted as our military's national song. And Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.